Welcome, everyone, to episode 423 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Dvorak. There are less than 2 weeks left in the regular season, just about. We're getting close to the playoffs, which means it is time for Hot Seat Watch. We got an explosive article coming out from Sam Amick and Shams Charania of The Athletic earlier this week, naming some coaches who may not be employed at season's end. One of them has made a lot of news this week, so we're going to get into all of that. Before we do, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed. Engage with us in real time or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is my co-host and also the host of the NBA show, which I made an appearance on this week. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
I am doing somewhat well, Brian. Still sick, but outside of that, I've had a good week. It's been a good week at work. I locked up an interview with John Hollinger of The Athletic. Nice. This is going to come out on vo.co, I think, later today, honestly. If not later today, then you can check it out starting next week. He was super thorough in like the answers that he provided me. So that's been super nice.
Very cool. Did he have some Paul Reed praise for you?
I didn't specifically ask about Paul Reed. He did have some Marcus Gasol tidbits and praised. So yeah, it was more about his tenure in Memphis, of course.
Okay, sure. That makes sense. He's saving the B-ball Paul for a separate article. I respect that. So, Mort, we haven't talked a ton about the Pacers this year. We've basically just said, you know what, injuries ruin at least one team every year. It just seemed like it was the Pacers this year with TJ Warren going down early, Victor Oladipo, the trade with, you know, him swapping out Caris LeVert, and then Caris LeVert misses a ton of time. Now Miles Turner is out indefinitely. So we thought it was just, you know, a pretty bad luck ultimately, and they're still going to make the play-in tournament. So, you know, that there's that at least. But then we get reports starting to trickle out. It was Tuesday night. Adrian Wojnarowski was the first to report that head coach Nate Bjorkgren's future with the franchise is uncertain. He had significant work to do with his relationships among players throughout the team and some members of the organization. The day later, Sam Amick and Shams Charania mentioned Bjorkgren as one of the candidates to be fired at the end of the season. And then Jake Fisher at Bleacher Report yesterday dropped a bombshell of a report, kind of detailing a lot of the issues that have been plaguing Bjorkgren and the Pacers this year. And it just sounds like he's an X's and O's guy, very much not a relationships guy. And that has come to bite them pretty hard. So what do you make of all of this, Mort?
Scout with Bjorkgren.
I liked it when you tweeted it. I liked it now. I'm always here for Scoutman jokes.
Right. The thing is, there was someone replying to that tweet saying maybe 1,000 people will get that reference, but it'll go over the head of a lot of people. But for those who get it, it's perfect.
I wish it was only 1,000 people. Yeah, I think. Right?
That's what I was thinking too.
Fortunately, I think way too many people learned of his reign of terror at some point.
Right. But no, but to answer you in a more serious matter, that's, look, you just cannot not have the personality with you as an NBA head coach, especially in today's NBA. I mean, not only has this become more and more a players' league, but at the same time, so much focus has been put on optimization of relationships, of symmetry, and all those buzzwords that actually helps promote a healthy product. So I'm just flabbergasted that the Indiana Pacers just did not do their due diligence on who Bjorkgren is as a human being. One thing is that you can find X's and O's guys virtually everywhere, but what you need to do to be able to be a good NBA head coach is you need to have a certain level of personality. If you don't, you're going to lose your team, and somewhat quickly, too. So I'm just very, very surprised that he kind of failed upwards in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, you know, this is, I'm taking this from Jake's report here. So as he rose through the G League head coaching ranks, he developed a reputation for improving his team's records and players' individual performances. And it sounds like throughout the interview process, he was very positive and they thought that energy would be infectious. But it sounds like as the season unfolded and as these injuries started to mount, that positivity went away. And, you know, a lot of the effusive comments that the players had for him early in the season have also gone suspiciously quiet as of late. But I think to your point, you know, there was part of Jake's report was, you know, the relationship with Warren in particular, who played under Bjorkgren in Phoenix. And they were saying, you know, Jake reported that several members of the Pacers organization believe Warren requested a trade upon learning that they hired Bjorkgren and he has no interest playing for them. Mm-hmm. Apparently, they never contacted Phoenix executives as well. He was a Suns assistant for a couple years. So, yeah, this is just like, you know, when you go into any NBA draft, for instance, like you're doing background checks and calling every, you know, not only their college coaches, but their high school coaches. Like, you are doing character references upon character references upon character references because you don't want to invest a first round pick in a guy that you have major concerns about.
Right.
You would think the same thing would happen with a coach, but it seems like Indiana just skipped that step for whatever reason.
Look, it actually is even more detailed in the draft. They go back to, like, elementary school teachers. What team was it that contacted a certain draft prospect school to speak to the janitor? Was it Andre Drummond? I think it was the Pistons with Andre Drummond back in the day because they were so scared to have another Darko Milicic situation on their hands that they basically said that we're going to do 1,000 times more research on Drummond than Milicic, for example, and they just went all in and it got as much intel as they could. Here, it seems like they didn't even lift the phone. And was it on The Ringer a couple weeks ago that we saw there was this piece about, I don't even remember his name, some power broker behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah. Your own work just, wrote about it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just about, like, here's a guy who actually specializes in, you know, recruiting certain people to head coaching positions and to GM positions and whatnot. Like, someone who just goes all the way into this thing and like, builds this cocoon of knowledge and information. And the Pacers, apparently, was just like, nah, can't be bothered. Too long, didn't read, hire.
Right. So where do you think the Pacers go from here? Like, is this thing salvageable, or do they, given the details that have come out this week, do they just have to move on from him? He's only got one more guaranteed year on his deal, so just, you know, swallow that last year and find someone else.
Oh, they have to get, look, here's the thing, even if Nate Bjorkgren comes back next year and he's a totally different human being, the media narrative above him will never give him a chance to succeed. This ship has sailed. Now his future has just been completely determined because, look, this is going to be number 1, 2, and 3 that reporters are going to ask about moving forward. And not just for next year, but after that as well, if they retain him for the long term. That's never going to go away. So, yeah, they have to do something right now. Otherwise, they'll be wasting a prime year of Domantas Sabonis and Malcolm Brogdon and Caris LeVert. Like, those guys are prime players right now. TJ Warren, too, depending on his future. Mm-hmm. So, of course, like, they have to go all in right now. And that means a new coach. And if that means someone like Mike D'Antoni, who they were interested in before, or my personal favorite, Caitlin Cooper from SB Nation.
Yeah. Well, I know she's been the Pacers have just broken her this year. Like, I've never seen her so down on the team, and especially the defense. You know, the departure of Dan Burke is certainly to blame for some of that. But, like, what the Wizards hung like 154 on them recently. And she, like, her tweets after were just like, she just didn't want to watch basketball anymore. It sounded like, which I've never seen out of her. So I'm with you. I think they do need to, you know, clearly this thing is too far gone at this point. And I think what's wild is that if they have hired the right candidate and actually, you know, do their background checks on these people and realize this guy isn't going to be a total dick, or girl, maybe they hire Becky Hammon for all we know. They have the talent to bounce back very quickly. Like, going into the season, the Pacers looked like a, you know, almost a lock to be a top six team in the East, and injuries are definitely to blame for some of that. But if you have a starting five of Brogdon, LeVert, Turner, Sabonis, and TJ Warren, that's a really good team.
So I'm actually a little bit confused about how you pronounce his last name, because NBA play-by-play announcers have been all like very separate on this. Is it Brissett? Is it Brissett? Or is it Brochet?
O'Shea, Brissett.
What is it?
I assume.
How do you pronounce that last name? Is it Brissett?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because I've also heard it be multiple pronunciations. So
okay,
I can't say for sure either way.
O'Shea, if we go by his first name, O'Shea, has been a revelation. So if you add him to the roster after, you know, a full training camp as well, that's a huge boon, and he's on a tremendous deal.
Yes.
So yeah, I totally agree with you that if they come back next year with virtually the same roster, they're going to look better. Like, Edmund Sumner took a step forward as well this year. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say that Bjorkgren didn't help guys get better.
Right.
He may very well have. It's just a matter of him not maintaining a positive relationship. Like, for example, it's not just with the players. He was pretty apparently, I don't want to use the word abusive because that's really hard, but he was, what's a kind word, Brian?
Confrontational?
Yeah, I think that's a good word. To his staff, for, what was it, not having ball racks in at the right spots?
Yeah, right. God.
Like, I mean, you can't do that. You just can't. That's utterly ridiculous, because that's just going to, players are going to notice that. They're going to carry that with them. So, yeah, no. I still think that this Pacers squad has significantly more raw talent on its roster than they did in the Paul George era. So for me, it's about getting all that talent healthy at the same time and giving this a proper chance to see what they have, like a full training camp, a proper head coach with a proper strategy, and let's see what they can do. Maybe they're not a championship level team, but that's fine. I wouldn't be shocked if this was a perennial second round team, which would be a upgrade in terms of not making the playoffs, so why not?
Yeah, so do you think they screwed up in just firing Nate McMillan? Like, was that the original sin here?
I mean, so that's tough, right? Because as we've talked about so many times before, Nate is known for being McMillan, that is.
Yeah.
He is known for having a very slow offense.
Mm-hmm.
But now that he's in Atlanta, it seems like that has been fixed. I don't really know, like, how that came about all of a sudden. Like, they're they're 23rd in pace. It seems like they play quicker, Atlanta. But I don't, with this particular roster in Indiana, I don't want a slow-paced coach handling this unit. I don't think that's going to behoove them. I think someone who just unleashes Brogdon and LeVert has to be the priority, and someone who just lets Sabonis be, well, he already is East Jokic, but more so, like, just basically tells Sabonis, up his volume, take 18 shots per game instead of 14. Like, go get 25 points instead of 20. Like, just be the main hub on the entire offense, and then let everyone else kind of feed off of you. I think that could be the right stepping stone. I still think certain issues persist, though, regardless of who you bring in as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole Sabonis, Miles Turner thing.
Yeah.
Can you really work a too big system in today's NBA? I think that's a valid question that you need answers to. But if you bring in a coach who is more offensively inclined, I at the very least think that they could have a lot of games where they just put up so many points that they're automatically going to win like 55-60% of their games.
Yeah, and I think even if their roster right now isn't a finished product, the talent they have, you know, if they decide to end up trading Miles Turner or TJ Warren, whoever the case, like, mm-hmm. those guys are desirable enough that they should be able to retool somewhat on the fly. It's not like yep. they're going to have to tear this thing down to the studs and go through a multi-year rebuild. So they have some flexibility. And, yeah, I mean, I'm still bullish on their long-term future as long as as long as they actually hire a coach who their players don't hate this time.
Well, I mean, look at their payroll. No one is really earning, like, top dollar.
Right.
Like, your highest earner next year is Malcolm Brogdon at $21.7 million, which, Brian, is totally reasonable.
Like, yes.
I don't see any bad deal in their, what, top five, top six?
Jeremy Lamb would be the one where you're like, but even him is fine.
And that's and that's even because of the injury in part. Because those are lingering issues that you have in the back of your head. But hell, this is a guy whose comeback he's hitting almost 41% from downtown, 95% from the free throw line, so he's at the very least an efficient scorer this year. He's got a true shooting percentage of almost 59, which is that's a career high too. So I don't even hate that. That's not even bad. I like, when I look over that payroll, is there even a single contract on that roster that's bad? Like, even Justin Holiday earning $6 million next year,
that's fine.
Yeah.
No, they're in really good shape. It's just like, this was a lost season. I was willing to chalk up the injuries, but now it seems like there's something a little more sinister behind the scenes. So they'll have this offseason to get it right.
They will. And one final note on them. Just one final note. If they end up in the lottery, Brian, which I think they will, because they are, right?
They're not winning the play-in tournament. Yeah, they're going to be in the lottery.
Exactly. Imagine if they jumped.
Yeah. I mean, the odds are very low, because they're still going to be, you know, what, they'll probably be, they have a 7.1% chance right now.
But Washington could overtake them for that, because Washington has played very, very well. So if they jump up, there's a 9.4% chance to jump into the top four. Again, still minuscule chances.
Right.
But I'm just saying, if the Indiana Pacers jumped up in the draft this year, oh boy, we could be looking at one of the most talented teams, just in terms of raw talent, in the entire NBA next year.
Yeah. All right, so the Pacers are the most explosive coaching disaster that's happening right now, but it sounds like they're not the only team that may move on from their coach at the end of the year. Shams and Sam Amick named a couple others, so we'll just go down the list here. The first is Terry Stotts, who he is going to have the Pacers in the playoffs for the eighth straight season, in all likelihood. I mean, regardless of whether they, you know, finish in the top six or if they're in the play-in, like, I have faith Dame in a one game, you know, win or go home game. I'm putting my money on Dame to win that game. So it seems like they should be in the playoffs, but, you know, we've seen, especially lately, the Chris Haynes piece, Chris Haynes of Yahoo is very plugged into Portland and Dame in particular. It basically seemed like a Dame Dollar hit piece diss track, just like written out instead. So
yeah, it wasn't a hit piece on Dame, it was a hit piece by Dame.
Yes, correct. Yes, it was. So what do you make of, you know, Stotts being in the hot seat? Do you think it is time for them to move on from him? Do you think he's to blame for, you know, the Pacers are 29th in defensive rating this year, despite bringing in Robert Covington, Derek Jones, who we thought, you know, that would help them improve on that end of the floor, and it just has not.
Well, you mean the Pacers, but yes. The Blazers. See, now you said Indiana. No,
My bad. Yeah. Right.
No, of course, the Blazers here. I don't think that Stotts is in any way at fault for the roster construction. I think he has input on roster construction. I know he does, because that's been a thing that Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN has laid out numerous times. But I don't think he's the guy who gets the final call on roster implementations. So we're looking at this through the lens of, has he done what he can do with this current roster? like, yes and no. I think he's done a wonderful job overall over the past couple of years in developing Yusuf Nurkic and just helping him put him in a situation to succeed. I think, obviously, giving Dame the green light was always the right call. Giving CJ the green light to shoot more threes this year, also the right call. But then you look at a guy like Robert Covington, who you brought up, like from a defensive perspective, he's been Robert Covington, but offensively he's been even more inconsistent than before. Mm-hmm. And I think that's on Stotts to not really utilize him a little bit more. I mean, I know that Covington is not a super high-volume scorer by any stretch of the imagination, but there's no justifiable reason that he's like at under 9 points per game while playing 32 minutes. I mean, this is a guy who has a history of at least being able to put up 12, 13, 14 points per game. And I think the more you can take that responsibility away from Dame and CJ so they just don't tire themselves out in the regular season, just fighting for the playoffs every single year, that's a win. So for him to fail on that, that's a loss. We need to chalk that up and go, here he did something wrong. He just did not direct the offensive energy the correct way. And does that mean necessarily that he's a bad coach? I wouldn't say so. Even the best coaches make mistakes. Overall, I think he's doing a decent job. They've made the playoffs routinely. What was it, like seven straight years, eight straight years, something into that?
Yeah, name? Seven heading into this year, seven. So most likely right. It's going to be their eighth straight this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a pretty good track record. Yeah. For me, it's just about, do you optimize the players that you have on your roster and then put them in a position where they can win? Some seasons, yeah, he does do that. And other years like this one, so far, no. I think he has mismanaged this just a little bit. The word mismanage is really bad. It seems like he's done something just dreadful. It's like it's minor mismanagement. I think a lot of coaches have had similar seasons as he's done, especially in terms of like roster rotation patterns. But should he be on the hot seat? I don't know. I mean, I guess the question comes down to who is like in line to take over that job.
Yeah, so Sam Amick and Sham said, if Stotts can't, quote, pull a rabbit out of his hat with a playoff miracle, as one source put it, the Blazers are expected to opt for new coaching voice. They mentioned potential candidates, Lakers assistant Jason Kidd, Hawks interim coach McMillan, Sixers assistant Dave Yeager, Clippers assistant Chauncey Billups, and Spurs vice president of basketball operations Brent Berry. But then they, two paragraphs later, they say if they ultimately make a move on the Stotts front, sources say they'd be likely to go for a big-name, high-dollar coach to replace him, which most of the guys I just named I don't really think fit that mold.
Agreed.
So
there's a name missing from that list, in my opinion.
Who's that?
Mike D'Antoni.
Mm-hmm.
Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and hell, even Robert Covington. Under Mike D'Antoni, are you freaking kidding me? Dame would average 32 and he would do it in less minutes.
That's probably true. Yeah. So what do you make of the, the list that those two laid out, and then B, yeah, D'Antoni, any other names stand out to you as being missing from there, or guys who, you know, or coaches who, you know, the Blazers should be targeting right. This offseason?
Well, I mean, just say no to Jason Kidd, I think.
Yes.
I don't think that's going to work out well.
I hope that this is just agent-driven at that point. Like, he surfaces in every single coaching search, but I'm really hoping it's just, you know, these reporters doing his agent a favor rather than teams actually seriously considering him.
Wouldn't it be nice to actually be able to read articles from some high-end media people where you don't have to take into account that they are doing agents favors?
It would be, but that is just the name of the game, so.
Yep. All right, well, no, I mean, Kidd, definitely not. I'm kind of, like, intrigued by the Brent Berry idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because Brent is smart, and also, from everything you hear about Brent, is he's a very compassionate human being. And you know what? This is going to sound utterly ridiculous, but just stay with me here. Just by following Brent on Twitter, like over the past many years, you'll know that. Like, he is just a heart-kind human being. Like, he is not, you know, a scout man personality. You know right. what I mean? He is legitimately just a good dude, and I think you need that. Again, that comes back to the personality thing. Also, he's got a great love for analytics, but not to the point where the numbers, let's say, overtake basketball acumen. So he's got a great sense of just balancing those things out. Like, whenever he's been on TV, whenever he's been in the public eye and spoken about basketball, mm-hmm. his takes have always been well-balanced, well-reasoned, well-argumented. And I think he's just got such a keen sense for how to, you know, talk to stars as well, because he was in the league. Like, he played for many years. He played alongside superstars. He played alongside, you know, role-playing. Even, like, a guy like Tim Duncan, who is a superstar but was a quiet one. He played on the Seattle Supersonics, who had Rashard Lewis and Ray Allen and all those guys. Like, he understands this. He's got a keen sense of awareness about these types of players. So I think that would be a super interesting hire. One final note. I'm confused. Chauncey Billups seems to be up for a new type of job within the NBA every single summer. It's one year it's the GM. Another year it's assistant GM. Then it's assistant coach. Now it's head coach. What does Chauncey Billups want to be?
Yeah, that's a fair question. I don't know, because, I mean, you know, he's on the Clippers staff right now, but they just hired Ty Lue. I don't think Ty Lue's going anywhere anytime soon. So
right.
There's probably not much pathway for him to be promoted there, at least.
But the reason I'm asking is because you don't want to end up in a Jason Kidd situation, right? Like, he started out as a coach, and, within the first year, he was like, no, I want to be a GM as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want to make sure that if the guy you're bringing in wants to coach, that's his number one priority. I'm not saying that it isn't for Chauncey. Maybe Chauncey is just this very open-minded individual who just goes, you know what? Whatever I'm given, whatever the task at hand, I'll focus 100% on that. In which case, thumbs up, go for it. Chauncey, much like Brent, is an incredibly smart human being, an incredibly smart basketball mind. I just want to make sure that, you know, you aren't looking ahead for a bigger job down the line.
Yeah, yeah. I'll throw out one other name just for them to potentially consider is Kenny Atkinson, formerly of the Nets.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Look, who knows if that fits the big name. Like, big name, high dollar coach makes me think they would be, if they don't go after D'Antoni, which seems like a possibility, you know, I wonder if they would start sniffing around some coaches who are currently employed. Like, Doc Rivers isn't going anywhere because he just signed with the Sixers last year. But,
yeah.
You know, like an Eric Spoelstra, a Brad Stevens, can they try to pry one of those guys from their current teams? I don't know. But if that's the mindset they're in, it wouldn't surprise me.
If Indiana University couldn't draw away Brad Stevens, right?
Once Brad Stevens realizes he's the future of the Celtics franchise is going nowhere, he's going to go to the Blazers instead. I respect it. All right, let's go to Mike Budenholzer next of the Milwaukee Bucks. I think to some extent it was a surprise that he even didn't get fired last year. When they collapsed in the second round against Miami, It seemed like he was really... His hot seat wasn't just hot, it was like nuclear reactor meltdown hot.
Yes, it was it was my ass after Taco Tuesday, yes.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because, you know, at the time, Giannis hadn't signed his Supermax, they hadn't made the Drew Holiday trade, so there was a lot of uncertainty about would Giannis sign that extension with Bud as the coach. Now we know the answer is yes. But... You know, it sounds like they say, Shams and Sam Amick say, a first-round loss is the doomsday scenario for him, and even a second-round loss would seem nearly impossible for him to survive. So that's what I want to dig into here, Mort, because, you know, now that the Nets have lost four straight, it's seeming just increasingly likely that the Sixers are going to finish as the one seed, which means we're getting... No, barring a first-round upset, we're getting Nets-Bucks in the second round. Mm-hmm. So do you think it's fair if you know, if it's a competitive, like maybe if the Bucks get just absolutely boat raced and, you know, blown out four straight times, then we could have that discussion. But if it's like a competitive six or seven game series, do you think, you know, that it's fair for them to fire him because they ran into Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving?
Yeah.
Oh, because okay.
So here's the thing. I understand where you're coming from with this, but you have to understand something. And I've said this on this podcast before, and it sounds very emotional, but you have to understand where I'm coming from with this. Regardless of who you are, if you come in with legitimate championship aspirations, it shouldn't matter who's in front of you. You have to pick up your game, and you have to come out on top regardless of who you're meeting. I don't care if it's the 96 Bulls they're up against. I don't care. If you come in with this roster, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, all healthy, by the way, and a very healthy supporting staff in terms of DiVincenzo, Brook Lopez, Pat Connaughton, Bobby Portis, PJ Tucker, Brent Forbes. You know what? Like, that's just, you got to win. That's the name of the game. That I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, well, they ran into the Nets, boo-hoo. No, you've got to win that. And if, like, yeah, you can say if this it's a competitive seven-game series that ends with a Nets buzzer beater, like, okay, we can have a conversation about whether or not that's warrants, you know, being fired or whatnot. But I understand that if they don't make it out of the second round, that's a problem, because it shouldn't matter who's in front of you. It really shouldn't. It's about raising the level of your players to win the championship. That's the name of the game. And for Budenholzer, who spent much of this year experimenting, which I think flies under the radar quite a bit, there's a reason that they've lost 24 games, and it sure as hell isn't a lack of talent. It's because he started just testing things out. He went deeper to his bench. He tried new things. And you know what? I think that's what he should have done. So for them to come in this year, they have to be ready now, because they've spent the year testing out new stuff. Now they have to come in and just play and be ready. And if the Milwaukee front office decides, you know, we just can't get stuck here in the second round or in the conference finals or whatever, like we have to go to the mountaintop. We have to go to the finals. You know, then you need someone else. This is one of those things where you just have to maybe acknowledge then maybe we need, instead of an A to B coach, we need a C to X coach. And if that's the name of the game, then they got to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. And I think it will depend on how competitive that series is. You know, assuming they lose. If they win, then Bud is probably safe either way. But, you know, if they lose, and if it's a four-game sweep and they lose by 30 points every game, then you can, you know, say we are far enough away from true championship contention. And even despite his experimentation, it didn't pay off in the playoffs for whatever reason, that we have to at least seriously consider looking elsewhere. You know, if it's a really close series and it's like, you know, I'm thinking back to like Philly Toronto a couple years ago, where Game 7 buzzer beater. You know, then I don't think they necessarily need to, especially because they have these three guys locked up for the foreseeable future. And it also goes to the point of, okay, sure, you want to move on, but who's on the market? Like, who is your? You better be damn sure you're getting your top target.
Absolutely. No, but here's the thing. Teams are already doing their due diligence right now. You know they are.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, the Milwaukee gig sells itself, right? You have Giannis signed now. There's no uncertainty with Giannis anymore.
And Drew,
yeah. So, yeah, I don't think it's a tough sell to get anyone to take that job. If it becomes available, I think it's instantly the most desirable, you know, compared to the Pacers and Blazers, who... Yeah, sure, they'll be playoff teams, but I don't think changing their coach is going to vault them from, you know, solid playoff team to legit championship contender. As long as the Bucks have those three guys, they are legit championship contender. But, again, who is that guy on the market other than D'Antoni, I guess.
No. No, you I think I have an idea here.
Okay.
But this guy's not on the market. You have to create his market.
Who?
Oh god, you're gonna hate me, and so is Jesse.
Oh no. No way. No.
I'm just saying, if DeRozan leaves, that's a rebuild situation.
But he's just gonna ride. There's no way he's gonna leave. Like if he leaves San Antonio, he's just done. There's no way.
Dude, I agree. I'm not saying I want this.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I want this. I think Pop should retire as a Spur. I would think this is like Michael Jordan going to the Wizards kind of thing. I don't want to see it. Which was Photoshopped, by the way. It didn't happen. I'm not saying it will happen, but couldn't you see the Bucks if they decided to try to move on? And also, here's the thing. Pop wouldn't go for it because Bud is his boy.
Right.
So, like, taking over a job from Coach Budenholzer, that's not going to happen. But that's the kind of scenario that I could see wherein they would look at it and go, you know what? We need the big gun here.
Yeah.
We need someone who can absolutely get us to the mountaintop. We have a team that's very much in his style, by the way. I mean, let's be honest. This is definitely Pop style. But no, I don't think it's going to happen, but that could be the one scenario I could see where they would go out and try to create a market for someone who is a top-tier legendary coach. Mm-hmm. But the Budenholzer, that relationship that he has with Pop, that's going to be the thing that's not going to make that happen. Now that I come to think about it, Pop would never do that. He would feel like that's a stab in the back.
Yeah.
And I have to assume so.
And I think that's what makes the Bucks decision probably trickier than even, I mean, the Pacers decision is easy given everything that came out this past week. But the Blazers, I think it's, you know, a somewhat tough decision given the longevity of Terry Stotts and the success that they had. And the Bucks too, like, you know, they had the number one seed each of the past 2 years. They're a legit title contender this year as well. And it again comes down to, do we think there's an actual upgrade on the market? And what do we think that Bud has been missing that we think this new person is going to bring in? Because we really need to be sure that this person is going to be an upgrade. Because we see, I mean, look at the Pacers. You know, you think we're going to move on from Nate McMillan, who, great regular season coach, struggled in the playoffs at times. We're bringing in this X and O's innovator under the Nick Nurse tree, and then, you know, it all goes to hell in a year. So it's not like Giannis is going to force a trade next year if they fire Bud and bring in someone else, but you risk wasting, much like the Pacers with Sabonis and Brogdon, you risk wasting a year of Giannis's prime, and, you know, Drew is only getting older, Middleton's only getting older. You risk wasting a good year out of all of those guys. So,
that coach isn't there. Like, let's just put it out there. That coach isn't there on the market. But that's why I keep saying that they have to create a market. So,
yeah.
There's another coach out there. And again, he is currently coaching an NBA team that's on its way into the playoffs. That said, if the Dallas Mavericks don't live up to expectations,
that's a good one.
There is a little bit of a buzz going on that they might make some front office changes. As we know, a new front office usually leads to what, Brian?
A coaching change, although in this case it should not.
It shouldn't, but it might, because that's what usually happens. And a Rick Carlisle going to Minnesota? Or sorry, Minnesota. Well, they wish. Milwaukee, of course. Like, that would be a major upgrade. That would be one of those I could see. You know what? After I said the Pop thing, I started thinking about the whole Spurs coaching tree. Like, even if Pop wanted to go elsewhere, he couldn't. Everyone else is just, like, from that Spurs mold. So he would be stabbing everyone in the back. So, like, the more I think about it, Pop's has just, like, painted himself into a corner. He can't take any job whatsoever. He churned out too many good coaches all around the NBA. But Rick Carlisle, I think that could be an interesting situation if they, like, pivot away from him. I mean, he is definitely a championship-level coach, He's also got a very strong resume with mm-hmm. European players, which matters in sure. this context.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
I kind of like that one, I think.
Yeah. It's going to be, the Bucks are going to, we'll revisit them, you know, in a month or two whenever they get, whatever happens with them in the playoffs, we will mm-hmm. revisit the Budenholzer situation because it will definitely be hanging over his head as we get underway here. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how it unfolds.
Let me just close by saying that if we were on Fantasyland and Pop was available, that would actually be the most Pop roster you could find in the current NBA, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, the Bucks roster right now is tailored for Pop.
That's very true. Although he'd be very mad that Brook Lopez is shooting as many threes as he is.
Oh my god, yeah. He'd be like, Brooke, I really liked you back in 08 when you played on the block.
Right, go yeah. Never again, Brooke. All right, let's go to the Sacramento Kings and Luke Walton, Mort, who...
Should yeah. walk, definitely. You don't even need to finish that. Bye, Luke. Bye. Go away. Well,
so apparently, I mean, Sam Amick, much mm-hmm. like Chris Haynes with the Blazers, Sam Amick is very plugged in with mm-hmm. you know the Sacramento Kings, and he and Jason Jones back in March wrote something about, you know, Luke Walton based on performance. Yes, clear, absolutely get rid of this guy. There is no question we should be moving on.
Yeah,
but it sounds like he might be more safe than his performance might suggest.
Yeah, I don't care. Go away.
Yeah, I mean, it said, you know, this is from the report in March, so this was a couple months ago, but they said he was not in any imminent trouble, and barring a complete nosedive in the second half of the season, he was likely to at least last through the season. There was a strong sense in coaching circles that Alvin Gentry would take over if Walton were eventually dismissed. Walton is still owed a combined $11.5 million in the next two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like the finances are certainly playing a part in their reluctance to get rid of him. But yeah, Mort, what do you think? Like, is $11.5 million of guaranteed salary for this coach worth punting possibly two more years?
No. So you finally struck gold in the draft a couple years ago with De'Aaron Fox. Then you kind of did it again this year with Tyrese Haliburton. Like, don't mess this up. Start fresh with these two guys. This is your backcourt of the future. Get someone in here that understands fully how to utilize them in an up-tempo setting. Someone who can really utilize this team in an accurate manner. Someone who doesn't create an environment where it's virtually every single player is involved in trade chatter every other week. I mean, look, it's just not working. This is the worst defense in the NBA, at least according to Basketball Reference. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, defensive rating is one thing, but also if you just use the eye test, defensively, they're absolutely horrid.
Yeah.
Which, like, De'Aaron Fox should be one of the best defensive point guards in the entire NBA, but he's handling so much of the offensive load that he's taking a significant step back in that department just because he can't be everywhere at once. Now Tyrese Haliburton comes in, he's got more size, he's defensively inclined, so now you actually have that backcourt partner who can take on the tough cover. That's great. Now you need to round out the roster with the right role players, guys who can shoot, guys who can defend, guys who can rebound. Like, a guy like Rashawn Holmes at the center spot has been a revelation for the Kings over the past 2 years. He's an unrestricted free agent, and you know what? I would be shocked if he doesn't leave. Again, if Luke Walton remains his head coach, mm-hmm. I think he's like, no, I want to go somewhere where it's way more serious because I'm a starting caliber center right now.
Right.
Marvin Bagley desperately wants out. That's also another thing that we need to take into account. Like, they need to get this right, and one thing is the front office. They need to get the right components in there, but also having a coach who can stitch it all together next season is just crucial, and I just don't trust Luke Walton to do that. I really don't. And, like, it's that, and then it's also just him, right? Like, let's just say it. there is a perception of who he is as a human being, right or wrong. I'm not going to say whether or not anything happened or what didn't happen, whatever. I'm not going to say anything about that. But there's a perception around him that is taking away so much attention, negatively so, by the entire organization, by every player, by every single thing. At some point, you're also just going to realize that that is going to not help your situation at all as an NBA organization.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so apparently Monty McNair, the Kings' first-year head coach, termed this as kind of a gap year. You know, their decision not to match the Bogdan Bogdanovic offer sheet in particular. They wanted to maintain their financial flexibility, so they're approaching this decision with that in mind. They're thinking like, oh, well, maybe we didn't, you know, set Luke Walton up for a ton of success this year. But I just don't think that's the right way to look at it. You know, if you're like, you're already at a point with De'Aaron Fox where he's going, you know, his extension kicks in next season. Like, we've had 4 years of him already, and you know, we have Tyrese Haliburton, who you have on a nice cheap rookie contract, but he's going to outplay that very quickly. So, you know, they're not in a super hurry, but they also can't just loaf around for the next 2 years with this like half in, half out rebuild, because by the time they're ready to compete, Haliburton's going to be up for an extension, and Fox is already going to be halfway through this next deal. Right. And, you know, we've seen over the last couple of years, once you get to that point in your post-rookie extension, that's when you start to get a wandering eye.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I hear it in terms of, you know, the ownership group lost upward of $100 million because of the pandemic. But, man, I mean, if this feels like a Tillman Fertitta situation all over again. Like, if you're not willing to pay, you know, if you're not willing to pay the requisite amount of money that you need to field a competitive team, despite what's going on with your other businesses, you should not own an NBA team.
Right. Yeah. And that's the end of it, really. But and look, this is not me just wanting to crap on the Kings. I think it would be a great story if the Kings became good again.
Yeah.
I really do.
Well, look at the Knicks this year.
Yeah.
I mean,
the Kings don't really have the same, like, level of fanhood and all that as the Knicks, but it would still be a great story because they were recently good in the start double zeros.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, in terms of perennial punchlines, like, the Knicks had just been so, outside of the early 2010s, you know, they've just been so depressing for so long. And they have one good season, and everyone's really fired up about it. We saw it with the Timberwolves a couple years ago, too, the 1 year that Jimmy Butler was there, where, you know, again, this is just like a sad sack franchise that has not really done anything. All of a sudden, not even that they, you know, they weren't a title contender. It's just like they squeaked into the playoffs, and it was exciting. And the Kings had that year a couple years ago where, you know, they finished around 500, slightly below, but it was like, oh, we see a positive trajectory here. This is encouraging.
Yeah.
And then,
oh, yeah, that was under Dave Yeager, right?
Right, right. And then, you know, things went south from there. But, yeah, like, I'm not rooting against the Kings here. I hope they get good. I want every team to get good. Like, that is only going to make the NBA more entertaining if we have fewer bad teams, we have fewer nights where we, you know, don't have to watch a seven-man Rockets team play basketball. Right. But, yeah, it just, I don't know. This, if they're really thinking, like, we can just buy time, you know, kind of like run out the clock on his contract, I just think it's sending the wrong message to that, to the entire team.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll leave the Kings there since that was easy enough. And Scott Brooks of the Washington Wizards was the last name that the Athletic folks mentioned. The Wizards have just been such a weird team. Like, COVID just wrecked them early in the season, but they've honestly been one of the hottest teams in the NBA since, you know, over the past month or so, and they are surging into the play-in tournament right now. They've got three and a half game lead over the Bulls to that final spot. So it seems like they are, you know, not only are they pretty safely in, but they're probably going to overtake the Pacers for the 9, and there's an outside chance that they could still even catch the Hornets for the 8.
Well, that doesn't surprise me when they have the next Giannis Antetokounmpo on their roster.
Oh, boy. So do you think a playoff berth, especially after, you know, the start that they endured, should that be enough to save Scott Brooks' job?
By the way, people are totally going to think that I think that Rui Hachimura is the next Giannis, by the way.
Like, he is. No. He is.
Two Scoutman references in one pod. Man. That's not great. So here's the thing. Scotty Brooks has not been good. And it's been this weird ideology that since they got Russ in there, they had this idea that everyone was, and no one was entitled to minutes. Everyone had to earn them and whatnot. All right, then Thomas Bryant went out with the horrible ACL injury. Ish Smith started missing a lot of time, and yet Troy Brown Jr. couldn't even make the floor. And even Wizards fans were like, really? Like, we need ball handling, we need defense, we need play initiating. Like, why is he not playing?
Right.
What is going on? And it's just this weird, uncanny thing. He hasn't been good for a while, and I don't think he really has... I don't know what the right term here is, a good grip on this team. Like, right now they're winning. I think that's more because Bradley Beal is one of the best scorers in the entire world of basketball. And also, Russell Westbrook right now is playing significantly better than how he started the year. I mean, I don't have the breakdowns in front of me, but right now he's averaging 11.5 rebounds and 11.5 assists per game. And, like, I want to say that at the halfway mark, he wasn't even, like, listen to that, not even averaging a triple-double, but you catch my drift.
Yeah.
Like, let's just go into it. Yeah, okay, so post-All-Star break, he's averaging 13 rebounds and 13 assists per game.
God.
That's just... Can we just take a moment? Like, I'm harsh when it comes to Westbrook. I really am. But that's just bonkers. And I'll do you this as well. 4 games in May, Brian. In the 4 games that he's played in May, he's averaging 15 rebounds and 17 assists.
Is that good? That seems good.
That seems good, right? And oh yeah, and 24.5 points per game as well. But it's been more about him getting more acclimated to the roster. It's been more about him and Beal just going bananas and kind of taking over games. I kind of feel like that Davis Bertans has also come a little bit more alive. He had a rough stretch earlier this season as well. Raul Neto has come alive. There's been a couple things that's just been going on. Daniel Gafford has been a revelation for them because he's now finally playing alongside a playmaker, which actually makes it able for him to finish lobs. That's look at what it does to have a playmaker, right? It's amazing. So I don't think this is like totally on Brooks. Like, oh look, we've been searching lately. That's on me. No, I don't think so. I think that's more on the players, the personnel, the guys there. So if a coaching upgrade came available, I wouldn't hesitate. I would definitely explore that immediately. I don't think it's difficult finding a roster upgrade.
Yeah.
Or a coaching upgrade.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, the question is, really comes down to Westbrook, right? It sounds like, based on what Sam Amick and Shem said, Westbrook... They said his desire to leave Houston for Washington back in training camp had everything to do with Brooks, who was always his biggest supporter during their 7 seasons together in OKC. So basically, Scotty Brooks was ready to let Westbrook be Westbrook again. Yeah. And for the first half of the season, that didn't go so well. The second half, it has been. He's, for better or worse, going to be on this team for the next 2 years. Like, he's owed $44.2 million next year. 47.1 the year after that, you know, unless they can trade him for a similarly bad contract, they already pulled that trigger once. Like, I think Westbrook is going to be in Washington for the next 2 seasons. So, is it like a Doc Rivers, Tobias Harris thing where Russell Westbrook just really works well for one particular coach, or one particular coach knows the buttons to push with Russell Westbrook to get him to be, I don't want to say in control, because that's never Russ, but like, you know, more in control, or at least less How do I phrase it?
I love how stuck you are in your own sentence right now, because I can harmful, totally relate.
Less yeah. actively harmful despite right. averaging a triple double. Like
I get it. Like, the framing of this is so weird because that's the thing, right? It's the whole thing about what the hell is he? What has actually changed? Like, when you watch Wizards game right now, he's still very frequently completely out of control. He's just hitting weird shots right now. And at the same time, guys are hitting shots off of his passes. Is that a hot streak? I don't know. Is it pure luck? Hell, I don't know. But for some reason, he's having a positive effect right now. It's just, it is what it is, I think. He's putting up stats and it's helping.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, I mean, I'm with you. If there is an obvious upgrade on the market, I don't think they should be so tied to Scottie Brooks because of Westbrook that they completely right. ignore, you know, if a Mike D'Antoni, for instance, says he wants to come right. to Washington, then yeah, you hear that out. But I don't know. I mean, if it all goes back to Bradley Beal ultimately, right? If Bradley Beal is happy with Scott Brooks, then I guess you can live with it. But if, you know, it's so weird because I think had the Wizards started really hot and then just gone into a tailspin late, like, the momentum of this season may make Beal feel more positively about it than he did when they were 6-17 or whatever. And yep. like every single game was just a meme of Bradley Beal looking dead inside. You know, like, now they're probably there's a realistic chance that they're going to make it at least into that 8-9 game, or like whatever the yeah. you know, the win or go home game.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, could they beat Charlotte or Miami in that game? Possibly. Like, they might make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm not ruling it out.
No, I'm not either. And yeah, I will stop there. I do not think they beat Philly in the first round, but. Hey, like, that making the playoffs is an accomplishment when you start 6-17 in a 72-game season. So
right. I mean, you know that Philly are so great at stopping ball-dominant guards, so
well, I'm going to guess Matisse Thybulle's playing more than 20 minutes a game if we get to that point.
Before we wrap up here, I have a crazy stat for you.
Oh, yeah, hit me.
So let's assume that this was a regular 82-game schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Westbrook would be on pace to have 935 rebounds and 935 assists on the year. Which, right, if he did that, and even if he like just upped it up a little bit, he would be sniffing a 1,000 season.
Man.
That's insane.
That really is.
That has never happened in NBA history. Having 1,000 rebounds, 1,000 assists, and 1,000 points in a single season? That's... Man, that's... I mean, look, I have a lot of criticism for Russ for a variety of reasons, but his ability to just put up stats... Like, he said it last week. What I do isn't easy.
Right.
Like, I don't think anyone disagrees with that. Well, like, the thing that we, and especially me, what I've criticized him about is more the shot selection, is more about, like, where his priorities lie. At no point should anyone go, oh, well, it's easy if you're chasing it. Like, no. Like, in this in May, like, getting 15 rebounds and 17 assists per game, I don't care who you are. That's extremely difficult. Yeah. So I just got to give a shout out just for his statistical accomplishment. I mean, are we reaching that point where Russell Westbrook might go down as one of the statistical goats? Statistical.
Yeah, I mean, without question.
Right?
He's already guaranteed, mathematically, has clinched a triple-double this season. So 4 of the past 5 seasons, he will have had a triple-double. And yes, I understand the criticism. It's just a round number, whatever.
Yeah.
Why aren't more guys doing it if that's the case? Like, I know all the because bad...
they're winning. They're playing winning basketball.
Yeah. I just want to separate. Like, Russ averaging a triple double is not the reason that he's not like a championship level player. Like, we need to separate that from, you know, his turnovers, his decision making, his poor shooting percentages.
Yeah.
Those are the reasons that he is not as impactful as his per game stats would otherwise indicate. But it's still ridiculous that he's putting up those numbers year after year. And those particular numbers are impactful. It's just you have to take the bad with the good with him.
He is, from a career perspective right now, getting close to 22,000 career points, 7,000 rebounds, and 8,000 assists. We're looking here at a guy who could, if he stays as productive over the next four seasons, maybe see a guy who comes close to being one of those 25,000, 10,000, 10,000, which I don't think anyone has done yet, right? Maybe LeBron has? Is LeBron over 10,000 assists yet or rebounds?
He must be by now.
I don't know.
I would think, just based on how long he's been in the league. Although I guess he's not, you know, he's not putting up 11 per.
Oh, he's super close. But and this is the thing about LeBron, which is super weird. He's only had 1 year, and that was the same year, his last in Cleveland, where he had over 700 rebounds, 700 assists,
mm-hmm.
and he did that the same year. But he's at almost 35,000 and 10,000, 10,000. Almost.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, that's insane, of course, but like I'm just saying, Russ, from a statistical perspective, he's in that category, which is insane to think about.
Yeah.
So anyway, just let's end the podcast on a positive Russ note, because that so rarely happens.
I agree. That's a good place to wrap up. I was going to ask if there are other coaches who should be on the hot seat, but you know what? I'm going to let you ride off in the sunset, so you always have this episode to point back to. When you go back to criticizing Russ next year, you can always say, go back to 423. I said a nice thing about Russell Westbrook.
Exactly. Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you, as always, for listening, everyone. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Feel better, buddy.
Thank you, man. Have a good one.